number three, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Monday. We say hello now to John McClain down in Houston. Hope he's doing well. What's up, John? How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. So the Titans haven't even unveiled the new logo or uniforms yet. There's just been supposed leaks. What's the vibe check of longtime Oilers fans down there in Houston?
I haven't heard one word from anybody about it.
Good.
I've tweeted and retweeted everything I've seen about it. I had one person who lives in Florida, who used to be here. He said, "Is this for real?" I sent him the stories I had and haven't heard back. I don't think anybody here gives a rat's you know what till they actually see the uniform, they unveil it. You know, it looks like it's Columbia blue again, which I think would be great. Anything that has Columbia blue on it is important to me because it's such a big part of my early part of my career now that's in my 50th year covering the NFL.
You're the best to ask this to because I was young and don't completely remember. But from what I think I remember, Bud, when he moved the team, had intended on keeping them as the Oilers, correct? And it was more the Nashville, Tennessee fan base that kind of wanted and pushed for the change, and ultimately that's what led to them becoming the Titans, correct?
No, Bud was never going to be the Oilers, no.
Oh, okay. All right.
He knew he was going to change it. He wanted Pioneers. And somebody in Memphis, I don't know who it may have been, John Glennon, heard about it, wrote about it. They ditched that and became the Titans. And Paul Tagliabue gave him in writing that nobody else could ever use the Oiler name. Bud said, if you know, he knew it was time to move on. And, of course, they were Oilers for the first two seasons?
2 years, yeah.
Memphis and Vandy. And I remember when they brought out Titans with the new uniforms and everything and moved into the new stadium, the people over there, Jeff Fisher, Greg Williams, and all of them were so happy about the ordeal they had gone through here the last two or three years. And then up there, being over at Baptist Sports Park, which was ridiculous, and all the stories associated with that, they were like kids on Christmas morning when they moved into their new facility and, of course, their new stadium. I was there for the first game, and I was so happy for them because people up there didn't – well, some of them did. Paul Kaharski, Jeff Legwall, Greg Pogge, those guys had been living down here covering them on a regular basis because we thought they were going to move a year earlier. And then people got so mad at Bud instead of letting him out of the last year of his lease, they made him stay that last season in 96, which was preposterous, and treat him like dog. And then when they got up there, Jeff Fisher was – his office was in a racquetball court, and it was just terrible what they went through here. And the first 2 years up there, you know, constantly having the Baptist Sports Park stories that Jeff Fisher and the players had told about – having to be in that facility, a temporary facility until they moved to the new one. I can tell you guys 2 hours worth of stories about that, mainly involving Bud.
I am sure. Do you think, looking back and, you know, knowing that now time has passed and you look at it from both, you know, Houston side, Nashville side, Bud side, and knowing all the hurt feelings and everything that was there, would it have made sense, though, to almost do a deal similar to what Cleveland did with Baltimore, or the NFL did when the Browns left for Baltimore, and that everything got left in Houston, and that the Texans would have become the Oilers? I know at the time it probably didn't stand a chance of happening, but hindsight being 2020, should it have gone that way?
No, they were never interested in that. Bob McNair told me early on, off the record, the Oilers were the Oilers, and he had been a season ticket holder since the beginning, but he wanted to start a new era, a new history, and he always wanted the name Texans because Texans was all-encompassing. And it was so, no, that was never the case. And Paul Tagliabue tried to tell Bud, now you realize you're going from one of the top – markets in the country to a very small market. And, of course, Bredesen did a great job of luring Bud up there. And the city of Houston turned their back on him. Houston could have kept the Oilers for $180 million public money. That's all he wanted, $180 million to put into a new stadium, and he would have put in the rest. But at that point, the team was terrible. People were so mad at him. The media turned on him. I remember one columnist we had called him the Antichrist, and it was just embarrassing, all the things the media did. And the only way our late mayor, Bob Lanier, could have not been elected for a second term was if he said or did anything favorable to Bud. And they were longtime enemies anyway from business deals they made. But I remember Mike McClure, Bud put him in charge trying to get a new lease from the Astrodome, and because they were the tenants and they treated like dirt by the Astros, the company that ran it for the Astros, and they said they were trying to sell it. They were not going to give them a better lease. Why would we give you a better lease when we're trying to sell it? So they just totally turned their back on him. And once he made that move, everybody in town got new buildings because Bud leaving it scared the hell out of them. They were going to lose another team or two.
Wow. John McClain's with us on the Chase McJoe Show. John, I mean, the Oilers have been gone now 30 years, almost. How is Bud remembered now, 30 years later?
Boy, I would love to see. I'm doing everything I can to try to help Bud get in the Hall of Fame, and it hasn't worked. And I would love to see him get in the Hall of Fame, because you can't write the history of pro football without Bud Adams, right, co-founder of the AFL, with Lamar Hunt. It was announced in Bud's office and all the thing Bud turned down. The Minnesota franchise, Lamar turned down the Cowboys franchise. George Halas promised them if they give up this idea of a new league that was going to cause a financial bloodbath that would ruin pro football. I know for a fact, because I've talked on talk shows down here about what I'm doing with the Hall of Fame, and nobody's gone, oh, my God, you're crazy, because there's not many still left from that period. I tell them I'm on my 30th year doing radio in Nashville, and they're like, God, it's been 30 years?
Right.
And I can't believe it myself sometime. And I owe all that to George Plaster. I think that a lot of people would be understanding. They don't have that hatred like they had for Bud. One of the worst scenes, I'll say the worst scene I've seen in all my decades of covering the NFL was the last game here, because we knew after the 96 season that would be it. Media was out from all over Texas covering the last game in the Astrodome, and we had like 10 from the Chronicle talking to the fans going into the locker room. And I said, I'm going outside the tunnel in center field out on the street when Bud pulls out from underneath into the sunlight and see if any fans are going to be out there. You know, they're not going to be waving goodbye. When I got out there, I could not believe how many people knew that that's the way his limo left the Astrodome. And they blocked traffic, and the fans were screaming and yelling the most horrible things, jumping on the hood, jumping on the trunk, pounding on it, screaming. And I felt bad for Nancy Adams to go through it, because it wasn't her decision. And the limo driver had to, you know, he had to just inch his way through the traffic and through the crowd, the mob, really. And finally they got away. And that's the last time anybody ever saw Bud at the Astrodome. And I knew, and fans should have known, but the media didn't do a good job here of telling the truth about what happened and what Bud wanted. He botched the whole thing about the way it happened. He and Mike McClure, I always thought if he let McClure handle it and not get involved, it would have been smoother. But the people, a lot of them just didn't understand, because the media didn't understand. A lot of media people here still don't understand about why the Oilers left for Nashville.
Yeah, John, go back. I remember talking to somebody. It was like, you know, Bud got a little sympathy when it was the preseason game that was canceled because the turf was terrible. Is that right? Or the turf came up?
Bud never got any sympathy for anything, Joe. The preseason game at the Astrodome. And the Astro was a dump. And they had not done anything to fix it up. And the owner of the Astros, Drayton McLean, he wanted a new stadium. So what happened that game, we get there, and at the time, you had the baseball configuration that you didn't get you didn't do the full football configuration on the field until baseball was over. So you had the dirt portions were still there. They played in it. So they go down there, and there were holes at one point. People could bounce up and down on the wood, which was on the playing field. And you would have thought Dr. Michael DeBakey was doing heart surgery over at the medical center with all the people down on hands and knees looking at all that. Broadcast coming from down there on the radio. Finally, they cancel it. And then the Astros tried to say, no, it's a great stadium, one of the best in the world, as soon as Bud reached his deal there. We're moving to Virginia unless we get a new downtown stadium. And they did.
Wow, what a story. What a time.
We'll have more with John McLean coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe on this Monday, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Monday, continuing with John McLean down in Houston. John, the Dolphins reportedly have released Tyreek Hill. What do you think the market's going to be for him? Maybe not this year, because reports are he still may miss the season due to injury, but what would the market be for him in the future?
I can't imagine it'd be very big. What's he done? He hadn't done a squat since he left the Chiefs. Did he help him win? He's always getting in issues off the field. It would have to be a team that had a veteran team with strong leadership and a strong head coach who thought they were, you know, had a hole for a fast receiver at 32, next year 33. I just do not think there'd be a big market for him at all. And there's, you know, when you are the Titans and the Raiders, you got the first and second most money, and you see all these cap casualties. And it's interesting because what the Dolphins did, that freed up $66 million in cap room of the players they cut. And just remember, if a guy's really good, he's not going to get cut. They find ways to keep him. But fans, I know fans here all over, oh, they got to get this guy. They got to get that guy. And I'm like, you know, that's just fans. They want everybody. But Mike Bergonzi's and Robert Saleh in a very envious position to have that kind of money and need the kind of help they do and kind of be able to choose what they want. And Robert Saleh, even though he had a losing record with the Jets and got fired, people around the league respect Robert because he did a great job as the coordinator before he got hired by the Jets. A lot of people, including a lot of media in New York, New Jersey, didn't think he got a full chance to show what he could do as a coach. And Woody Johnson is such a meddlesome owner up there who has to sign off on the coach and GM and gets involved. It's almost like nobody holds it against you. Now that Robert's going to call the defense, which is the smartest thing he can do, and now you got to make sure. And I think Brian Daboll's a great coach for Cam Ward. And it's going to be fun seeing what they do in free agency, what they do with players who get cut for cap casualties, because there's going to be a lot of options for a rebuilding team with a lot of money.
How much do you think Gus Bradley can help Saleh, though, with Saleh having to handle being the head coach but also calling the defense and having a veteran defensive coordinator with that same title likely up in the booth helping him out?
You got to think he's a great resource. Gus has been a longtime defensive coordinator, been a head coach. Robert, of course, has been a head coach. Daboll's been a head coach. I like that. And some teams that have guys who haven't been head coaches, they're making sure they have somebody like a Gus Bradley or Brian Daboll who can ordinarily would help a young guy. Like, say, Clint Kubiak. You know, Clint's been in football forever, and he's only 38. But, you know, you need strong people around you who have experienced what you did. And Saleh's going to be a better coach with the Titans than he was up there. because he's got a quarterback, and he knows who the quarterback is, and he didn't have that up there. I can't remember who it was. A national media person I respect was looking for somebody to go out on a limb with about who could double their win total, and they said, "Well, the Titans." And I thought, "Well, that's not that big a deal to double their win total." But I think the fans would be happy with it. When Gary Kubiak came in here and took over a 2-win team, won 6 games first year, and we're like, hallelujah, happy, happy times are here again. And then they just improved every year, and I think that's a good chance that's going to happen there. Another thing I'm fired up about, and I assume you guys are too, is Mike Bagonzi getting control and being able to pick with Robert Saleh, of course, and they'll consult Bradley, and they'll consult Daboll about who they're going to sign, who they're going to draft. But this is Bagonzi's baby, and he's learned from the masters in Kansas City. And so that bodes well, but we're not going to know till the proof's in the pudding. But it sure is exciting for the offseason.
John, I'm looking at the 1977 Houston Oilers coaching staff. They had 9 coaches. Chase was reading off the 2026 Titans coaching staff. They have 21 coaches. When did all, if you can remember,
that's all.
Right?
One thing the other day had 31 assistant coaches.
Yeah, why is that? Why has that become a thing all these years now, having all these different coaches?
Well, one of the things is if you're good, you're going to lose coaches. So Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, and the point John Harbaugh, you lose a defensive coordinator, you better have a positions coach ready to step up who knows your system. Same way on offense. You lose your offensive coordinator, you'd like to have a quarterback coach, passing game coordinator. Then you have an assistant quarterback. I think, and because the teams make so much money now, most owners, not all of them, but most owners are going to sign off on things like that when you need money for extra coaches, because we see them moving around all the time. And I guess, you know, it's like teaching a class. If you're going to teach 50 instead of 100, you should be able to get your message across better with 50 than 100. And that's what it is. Inside linebackers, outside linebackers, run game coordinator, passing game coordinator. You know, I'm wondering, the two of the best offensive line coaches in NFL history are out there, Jeff Stoutland and Mike Munchak. Now, Mike technically works for the Rams. And I can't believe those guys, people haven't given Stoutland a blank check, saying, you fill it out. And Munchak, as you guys know, Mike is a great offensive line coach, and that's one of the most poorly coached positions in sports. And that's the key. Maybe if you have a bunch of coaches and you have 2 or 3 that are not very good, you got a better chance that if you have a bunch, you got a chance that you got better ones. I'll tell you what you don't want. One year going to training camp, Hugh Campbell was the Oilers coach, and they were terrible. This was in 84 and 85, and I went into their offices, and I saw a list of what the coaches were supposed to bring to training camp, and I'm not going to say who this coach is, but his name was at the end, and it said Popcorn Popper.
We need to get one of those around here at the radio station. John, the NFL struck gold moving the NFL draft around. Do you think they might do the same thing with the combine in the years to come?
Oh, I think they could, sure. The combine, though, is so complicated. There's so many things you have to do. At one point, it was in Seattle. Putting it centrally located is so important. Having everything you need where you can walk everywhere. But the draft, I never thought the draft would work outside New York. And boy, was I wrong. It's been a tremendous hit. Everybody wants it. And I know Jerry Jones is dying to get the combine. Stan Kroenke's dying to get the combine in L.A. And what Jerry can offer is at their facility, they have a great indoor stadium. They have all those outdoor fields. They have a Momni Hotel right there, and they have a hospital right there. So players wouldn't have to get on vans and go to the hospital like they do in Indy. Everybody walks everywhere else. The only problem with where the Cowboys facility is in suburban Frisco, everybody would have to have a rental car, which people don't need in Indianapolis. So I don't know anybody in the NFL who doesn't want it in Indianapolis other than Jerry Jones and Stan Kroenke.
Has that combine lost its luster because so many guys now refuse to do this or that? It's not like it was 30 years ago when a Mike Mamula could show up and shock the world. I just think it's kind of lost a little bit of its luster, John.
And I'm hearing more teams are not going, and because you can get everything on tape sent to you. But there's a lot of coaches like those 15-minute interviews so you can look them in the eye. I remember Gary Kubiak used to tell me he could get everything on film, but he wanted to sit there and ask the prospects questions and look them in the eye. Well, now, because of pro days and private workouts and all that, you can still look them in the eye if you want to talk to them. But fewer and fewer are going to the combine. I'm not really sure why. Maybe it's because there's got to be, they don't want to do all the media, but they've made it so much easier for players, I mean for coaches when it comes to the media. Used to where we were inside the convention center in Indianapolis, they would have to walk right past the media, and they would just get stampeded, and they'd look for shortcuts, going outside in the snow, anywhere they could to not have to stop and talk to the media unless they were scheduled. So I still like it. Once it went to the NFL Network, it took it to a new level. I watch all of it. I watch the replays late at night. I started going to Indianapolis when there were like five or six writers there, no broadcasters, no talk show hosts, and now it's just packed because it's a great way to network. And I don't miss it because of the players. I miss it because I miss seeing my friends in the media from all over the country.
I'll never forget sitting there at Indy and having lunch with you and Floyd and just sitting there listening to the stories because it was fun.
Well, I just wish we could have told half the stories I know that about Floyd and players, but we had to keep tight-lipped on those.
There's a few, that's for sure. John, appreciate the time as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Guys, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much, as always.
John McClain joining us from Houston, and yeah, that was a fun one.
I bet.
I think I said two words because I was just in awe of all the stories that Floyd and John were telling, and you know, maybe there were some stories that Floyd didn't want John to tell.
Yeah, there were. That had been a fun conversation.
Oh, it was awesome for sure. We'll have more coming in hour number three of Chasing Big Joe, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel on 102.5 The Game.